It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price. Light at the end of the tunnel.
My message is hope and help are on the way.
That is our top story this Friday. Drug maker Pfizer seeking emergency use of a COVID-19 vaccine today. Health Secretary Alex Azar says the vaccine will be ready to go before Christmas.
We'll ship millions of doses of vaccine within 24 hours of FDA approval.
Dr. Azar says 40 million doses of COVID vaccine will be available before the end of the year. The nation's leading infectious disease expert says the Trump administration deserves most of the credit for Operation Warp Speed.
I think they get considerable credit. I mean, I think you have to call it the way it is. I mean, this was something that was put together, you know, a combination of leadership from the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Defense. Definitely they should get credit for that.
Dr. Anthony Fauci says never in the history of mankind has a vaccine been developed so quickly and so safely.
It's important for people to understand that the speed with which this occurred was not compromising safety whatsoever, nor compromising scientific integrity.
Fauci says the general population will be able to get the vaccine in April, and it cannot come soon enough. More than 187,000 Americans infected with the virus on Thursday. That's another daily record. The CDC, meantime, urging everyone to stay home this Thanksgiving. Dr. Deborah Birx chairs the president's coronavirus task force.
Really limit interactions indoors to immediate households when we see this level of community spread.
The presumptive president, meantime, meeting with the nation's governors yesterday to come up with a game plan to combat the virus, which is spiking all over the country. With over a quarter of a million Americans dead from the disease, Joe Biden says he will not shut down the country again to get the pandemic under control.
I am not going to shut down the economy, period. I'm going to shut down the virus. That's what I'm going to shut down.
So that's
ruled out. I'll say it again. No national shutdown.
New restrictions taking effect today in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. There's now a statewide mask mandate in New Hampshire. And in California, bars and restaurants are closing at 10 p.m., so, too, is all non-essential travel.
It's a bunch of tomfoolery.
I don't approve of it, but it's going to happen.
It's time for us to start taking it seriously.
The California nighttime travel ban starts this weekend. Sheriffs in some counties say they will not be enforcing it. Today, Georgia declared Joe Biden the winner there. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger.
The numbers reflect the verdict of the people, not a decision by the Secretary of State's office or of courts or of either campaigns.
Vice President Mike Pence will be in Georgia today trying to drum up support for the two Republican Senate candidates in that runoff election, an election that will determine which party controls the Senate next year.
This is an election that's gone in overtime with David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler running against John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock for all the stakes. Control of the Senate is on the line in Georgia.
Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton says what happens in Georgia in January will speak volumes for what happens in America next year.
If Chuck Schumer gets his way, if he gets the Senate majority, as we heard on the streets of New York just a couple weekends ago from him, that he plans to change America. I can tell you, having been in Georgia yesterday, that people there don't intend to let Chuck Schumer change America, because his kind of change means packing the court, raising your taxes, making Washington, D.C. a state, taking away your health insurance on the job, taking away your gun.
Cotton says if the GOP does not hold on to the U.S. Senate, America as we know it will be forever changed. Despite losing Georgia, President Trump's election fight continues.
There's not a singular voter fraud in one state. This pattern repeats itself in a number of states. Almost exactly the same pattern.
Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani says the system was rigged against the president to prevent his reelection.
There was a plan from a centralized place to execute these various acts of voter fraud.
The Trump campaign says the centralized plot was communist in origin and came from Venezuela via the Dominion voting system.
Dominion vehemently responding in a statement saying the latest flood of absurdities is deeply concerning, not just for Dominion, but also for our dedicated state and local partners in the electoral process on hold. Dominion is plainly a nonpartisan American company with no ties to Venezuela or Cuba.
That's Griff Jenkins at Fox News. Joe Biden slamming the Trump campaign's claims of widespread voter fraud.
I think they're witnessing incredible irresponsibility, incredibly damaging messages being sent to the rest of the world about how democracy functions. Well, I don't know his motive, but I just think it's totally irresponsible.
Jonathan Turley, a law professor at George Washington University, says the time has come for the Trump campaign to show proof of voter fraud.
I'm very sympathetic to the argument that it does take time to get affidavits and evidence. On that part, they were perfectly valid in saying that they're now moving towards court. But this is really not the time for opening statements. This is the time for hard evidence. And this press conference was long on heated rhetoric and short on hard evidence.
In Michigan, meantime, the election certification process could be delayed after two Republican canvass board members in Wayne County reversed their votes. Monica Palmer says she was harassed by a fellow Democratic board member.
He's used his social media platform to repeatedly dox me, post my phone number, my home address, my email address, and encourage people to stop by my house and share their anger with me.
President Trump will meet with Michigan's Republican legislative leaders today at the White House. Joe Biden sits down with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer in Delaware. Still to come this Friday, COVID crisis in Buffalo, COVID school plan in Rochester, and COVID travel rules in Pennsylvania.
This is meteorologist Ken McKinley. Enjoy it outside this afternoon. A lot of sunshine for most all areas and temperatures above 60 in all areas. Brisk breezes from the southwest. Full forecast details for the weekend coming up in about 10 minutes.
Okay, Ken, checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Friday, November 20th. News of a COVID vaccine before the end of the year as health officials excited to say the least. But in New York State, folks will have to wait to get vaccinated. Governor Cuomo says he doesn't trust the vaccine because it was developed under the Trump administration.
We currently have the worst governor in America.
New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik.
Governor Cuomo, he is taking absolutely the wrong approach. He also is not applying the rules to himself. So Governor Cuomo has attended private events without wearing masks, without requiring socially distancing. This is why the American people are so frustrated with failed leadership from our Democratic governors. It's big government. It's rules for thee and not for me.
Stefanik says Governor Cuomo is putting politics over public safety by refusing an FDA-approved COVID-19 vaccine. Shutdowns taking effect today in the greater Buffalo area, which was designated an orange zone this week by Governor Cuomo. All high-risk, non-essential businesses closed because of the pandemic, schools online only, and limits being put on indoor and outdoor gatherings.
The second wave is here, and it's here with a vengeance. I'm very fearful about what we're going to see in the next few weeks.
Erie County Executive Mark Poloncar says this year has been a year to forget.
It's not been easy. The business owners who've had to unfortunately put sometimes their dreams on hold and other ones have lost their dreams as a result of lost businesses. This has not been a good time. 2020 will go down as one of those years that when we look back on it, we'll all talk about how we got through it. And unfortunately, some of us did not get through it.
Poloncar says parts of western New York could move to a red zone next week. That would essentially lock everything down. Today's the day new travel restrictions took effect in Pennsylvania. Out-of-state visitors will need to take a COVID test 3 days before arriving in the state or else quarantine for 2 weeks. This bartender says the law will be impossible to enforce.
We can't just go up to a customer and be like, hey, do you have a test? Did you get a test? Where are you from?
Lehigh, Pennsylvania town supervisor Roger Major says he's getting very little guidance from the state.
Nobody's saying who's going to enforce it, how they're going to enforce it.
Pennsylvania Health Secretary Rachel Levine says the travel order is enforceable with fines ranging up to $300, but she adds cops will not be stopping vehicles at the border or checking passengers coming off of airplanes. Restaurants and gyms in Philadelphia filing suit for the right to stay open even as COVID cases surge. Steve Kindler runs a Planet Fitness in Philly.
The fact that the Eagles can work out and the citizens of the city can't, that's a tough pill to swallow.
Philadelphia's banned indoor gatherings of any size. Attorney Brian Fitz has filed a lawsuit on behalf of dozens of restaurants in the city.
We have no reports of the restaurants being linked to any infections. How is it dining in a restaurant in the city of Philadelphia more dangerous than going to a Lowe's?
Fitz says the restrictions in Philly violate the constitutional rights of small business owners. Kids returning to school next year in Rochester, New York will do so in phases. Superintendent Leslie Myers Small says there will be a three-stage plan to bring students back to the classroom.
Principals are going to have to get working on that right away because that's really the trigger point for every single thing else that we do.
Myers Small says the goal here is to have all the students back for in-person learning by February. In Rochester.
That will determine the number of staff that we need to, whom we need to report in person. We have ample PPE at this time, but we'll need to know, do we need to increase that because we have more numbers of students and adults or fewer?
Myers Small says parents in Rochester will still have the option to continue at-home learning. A request to roll up your sleeve in this era of COVID-19. Paul Sullivan with the American Red Cross says they desperately need more blood and plasma donors.
As the pandemic continues and cases increase, the demand for convalescent plasma has been steadily rising.
The plasma can be used to help COVID patients. Razor close. That is the status of New York's 22nd District congressional race between Republican challenger Claudia Tenney and the Democratic incumbent.
The latest official numbers have Tenney leading Democratic incumbent Anthony Brindisi by a razor-thin margin, as close as it could be. I've been in contact with all eight county Board of Election offices. They tell me in all more than 300,000 ballots have been cast in this race.
Josh Rosenblatt with WBNG-TV says absentee ballots are still being counted. This race, a rematch from 2 years ago when Brindisi won by less than 5,000 votes. Food insecurity becoming even more of a problem today with a lot of folks out of work because of the pandemic. Andrea Tomza, CEO of a not-for-profit that works to put food on the table of impoverished Americans. She says for too many of us, we're not sure where that next meal will come from.
We went from seeing about 10% of households nationally suffer from food insecurity to seeing 23% of households nationally now reporting food insecurity, which is mind-boggling.
54 million Americans face food insecurity on a daily basis. Tomza says for a lot of kids, school is the only place they can get a good meal. And with so many schools closed, that is not happening right now. Let's pause for sports. It is sunny time. We call it your two-minute drill.
Yeah, last week against the Buffalo Bills, Kyler Murray unleashed a Hail Mary to DeAndre Hopkins for a last-second win. Could he do it again against the Seahawks, trailing 28-21?
Here's Murray sacked!
No, the Seahawks' Carlos Dunlap with the sack. That impressed head coach Pete Carroll.
It was just a really good night of football, and it was great to see Carlos Dunlap, you know, finish it off on almost a walk-off sack, which was pretty cool and really fun, and great to see him continue to contribute.
Seattle took over first place in the NFC West at 7-3. Cardinals slipped to 6-4, mostly because of penalties, says head coach Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, I think it was like 16 penalties maybe for over 100 yards, which you're not going to win in this league doing that, and especially against a quality team like Seattle. So that's unacceptable to have that many, and we got to clean that up.
While there was no Hail Mary in the NFL, there was in college football. Tulsa trailed Tulane 14-0 with 9 minutes left. They were able to battle back, trailing 21-14 with 6 seconds left. Tulsa quarterback Davis Brin.
And this will be the final play. Brin going to go to the end zone. It is caught! Touchdown, Tulsa!
Then in double overtime.
Pratt going to throw. Pratt pressure. It is picked off by Saban Collins! And the player is going to end it for Tulsa in double overtime.
Wisconsin with a pick six and a 30-24 win to improve to 5-1. Tulane falls to 5-5. If the NBA free agency begins tonight, starting at 6 o'clock, players can agree to terms but cannot officially sign deals until Sunday. And former Notre Dame football coach Lou Holtz has revealed he's infected with the coronavirus, saying he's feeling fatigued. The legendary coach was with the Fighting Irish for over 30 years, won a national championship back in 1988. Lord, for Coach Holtz and for all battling coronavirus, please bring a speedy recovery. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphier.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come this Friday, the boys are back. Capital Connection on the way, plus being present without actually being there this Thanksgiving. Family Life's Brandon Dixon will explain.
We might not be called to scream the truth from the mountaintops or from every street corner or join in every protest, but we're all called to not allow ourselves to go along with what is not true. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Acts 4 describes how after throwing Peter and John in jail for teaching the people and proclaiming in Jesus the resurrection of the dead, the Sanhedrin demanded they not speak or teach at all in the name of Jesus. Peter bluntly replied, "We cannot help but speak about what we have seen and heard." Throughout history, of course, Christians have faced demands to be silent. And throughout history, they've refused and lived not by lies, a manual for Christian dissidents. Blogger and author Rod Dreher thinks that Christians in the West are now entering a season where we'll not only have to decide whether or not we'll be silent, we have to decide whether or not we will allow ourselves to be forced to go along with what is not true, with lies. Like those who endured the hardest days of communist Eastern Europe, Western Christians face a totalitarian future. Of course, we don't face the sort of state-sponsored violence, persecution, or physical coercion that many, many others have throughout history. But some have lost jobs. Others, like cake artist Jack Phillips or florist Baronelle Stutzman, have all but lost their livelihoods. In our current context, what Dreher calls soft totalitarianism is mostly administered not by the state, but by corporations and other institutions that are run by managerial elites. Our social media profiles, our smartphones, and our smart speakers provide these managerial elites and corporations with an unprecedented ability to monitor what we say and what we do. In our recent conversation for the Breakpoint podcast, Roger Ayer pointed to the corporate reaction to Indiana's Religious Freedom Restoration Act that dates back to 2015. He sees it as a key moment of cultural transition. I do too. Though Indiana's legislation was essentially identical to its federal counterpart, corporations responded by threatening economic sanctions. Some corporations closed down offices in the state. The NCAA, which is based in Indianapolis, threatened to move the Final Four basketball tournament. During the controversy, a man whose mother had grown up under the hard totalitarianism of communism wrote to Roger Ayer and told him that his mom saw parallels to what had happened in Eastern Europe. Since then, many others from across Europe told their own observations. Many of these moving stories are included in the book. In fact, the interviews with Christians who remain faithful under communist tyranny that Rod includes in this book are worth reading, even if you aren't convinced by his comparisons between their day and ours. Above all, these dissidents, such as Father Tomislav Kolakovic, a Jesuit priest who was responsible for an underground church network in Czechoslovakia, have a great deal to teach us about what it means to live not by lies. We have much to learn from the Benda family from Prague about how to catechize our own children when everything, it seems, is pointing them away from the truth. And of course, Solzhenitsyn and Havel and so many others who will go down in the annals of church history, many as saints. My conversation with Rod Dreher, author of Live Not By Lies, is available now on the Breakpoint podcast. You can come to breakpoint.org to find it and his book, or you can subscribe wherever you get your podcast to the Breakpoint podcast. There's also a video of the interview available on YouTube, which can be watched and shared. We'll link you to it at breakpoint.org. While, as Hebrews says, we've not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood, the most tempting thing is not to resist at all. Live Not By Lies is, in my view, a vital book, if only for all the amazing stories. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour, the weekend is here.
Good afternoon. It's breezy outside. It's unusually warm for this time in November, and a bit of a bonus, we're seeing more sunshine than I thought might be the case earlier, so it'll be a very pleasant afternoon in all locations. The clouds will move in tonight as a cold front approaches from the north. That front will push south through the region as we head through the night tonight, producing very little, if any, precipitation. And tomorrow, temperatures will be cooler as a result. Some sun will come out, mainly north of the Thruway in New York. The clouds may be rather persistent farther to the south. We'll continue to have clouds as we head through tomorrow night, and approaching low pressure on Sunday will bring some precipitation to the area, mainly rain, but there may be a little bit of wet snow in some locations, especially higher terrain areas. But even there, no serious accumulation is anticipated at this point.
Thank you, Ken. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are, as always, Michael Geer with the Pennsylvania Family Institute and Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Michael, let's begin with you. Much has been made about this new mask requirement in Pennsylvania. You got to mask up even in the privacy of your own home due to spiking COVID cases. Of course, we're all taking this disease very seriously, Michael. But in your opinion, is this an overreach of the Wolf administration?
Well, I think it is, and it's making national news because it is an overreach just in terms of common sense and what people look at it. But I talked to our attorneys here at our Independence Law Center regarding the constitutionality of it, and although it's unlikely to be litigated, I don't think, because I don't think there's going to be enforcement of this suggestion or mandate from the Secretary of Health. But our attorneys would say it's unconstitutional and something that that is well beyond the pale of what the government can mandate or require of people within their own homes.
Yeah, and Governor Cuomo at that lively press conference this week, we'll talk more about that in a minute, Jason, but he basically doubled down and said and encouraged police officers to, yeah, if you see a home where there's 20 or so cars parked outside, go and tell them party is over. Now, the sheriffs say they're not going to be peeking in any windows Thanksgiving Day. Your thoughts on where the governor is and where law enforcement is on this enforcement issue in New York?
Well, you know, this week we saw building inspectors in New York City that were literally steering with binoculars into buildings, taking pictures in Jewish communities, trying to document more people inside a home or a synagogue than they believe should be. But I'm with Michael on this. I think that these attempts to reach into the home to control the individual behavior is blatantly unconstitutional. And while the governor wants sheriffs to enforce that throughout the state, I do not believe those sheriffs are going to do so, which means we're also probably not going to see court action. I think this is another opportunity for the governor to use the bully pulpit, but he should be using it in a constitutional manner.
Yeah, one quick question back to you in that press conference, Jason. Governor Cuomo really getting into a shouting match with reporter Jimmy Vielkind, insisting that New York City schools would indeed be open, and less than an hour later, Mayor de Blasio shut him down. How can there be that much of a communication gap between the mayor of New York City and Governor Cuomo?
I don't think there is a communication gap. I think there's scorpions in a bottle. That's what's happening between New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and Governor Andrew Cuomo. There is a power struggle over who really is in charge. And while probably Bill de Blasio could not open the schools without the governor's permission, he certainly showed that he can close them without the governor's permission. And that is the authority battle that's going on right now.
Yeah. Michael, more post-election litigation this week in the Keystone State. Of course, next Tuesday is the deadline to certify the results. There was a hearing in Williamsport. What are the issues being argued by the Trump administration at this late hour?
Well, there are a number of issues that are being argued, but the one in the Middle District, which was argued actually kind of at the last minute by Rudy Giuliani, deals with the issue of the ballot watching, the ability for partisan ballot watchers, specifically the Republicans, to observe the ballot counting that was taking place in Philadelphia. Initially, they were shut out completely, and then there was a court order that said they could be in there. But even in that regard, they moved the machines and the counting away from the real visibility of the ballot counters. Other issues that are being litigated as well involve something related to equal protection issues, because in Democrat counties, the Democrat election officials were allowing ballots to be fixed, ones that were called sort of incomplete ballots, while in Republican counties, they were not allowing that. And that raises equal protection questions.
Let's talk about the pandemic a little bit more, Jason. Governor Cuomo never met a vaccine he doesn't like. He wants sixth grade girls to get the HPV vaccine. Big proponent of mandatory measles shots. But when it comes to COVID-19 vaccine, not on board with that. Can you explain this posturing as we talk about 250,000 people dead from this disease? Why in the wide world of sports would he be opposed to a potentially life-saving vaccine here in New York?
Well, again, we mentioned with Mayor Bill de Blasio, scorpions in a bottle, and I think you see that also with President Donald Trump in Washington, D.C., to where there is a power struggle that is going on. And in this dynamic, the governor wants to assert that he is the leader in the COVID fight. And when you see things such as Operation Warp Speed that are bringing about these vaccines, that's a problem for the governor, who has tried to position himself as the national leader on this issue from a state executive position. And so I think that sooner or later, the governor's going to have to come around to realize that when the vaccine is approved and it's found to be safe, that people are going to want access to it.
Yeah.
And that's an issue that we're really just going to have to fight here in New York.
Well, history is made in Harrisburg, Michael, with the election. The first time a woman will serve as Senate Majority Leader. Who is Kim Ward? Where does she stand on the issues that are near and dear to your heart?
Well, Kim Ward is a Pennsylvania state senator who was elected from Westmoreland County, which is just east of the Pittsburgh area. She's in the midst of her third term, and for the most part, she is with us on the issues that that we at Pennsylvania Family Institute and our supporters care about. She's very strong on the sanctity of life issue, has been good on the religious liberty and LGBT issues from our perspective as well. She would likely vote for expansion of gambling in Pennsylvania, which is not something that we endorse, but she's not a promoter of that issue. So we're happy with her elevation to that position, and we know that she'll be easy for us to work with.
Yeah, I think next November 28th, correct me if I'm wrong, November 28th, the deadline to certify the New York election results, but the dust is still yet to be settled with these absentee ballots, Jason. We have seen some races conceded. I saw the state Senate race between Leslie Danks Burke and Tom O'Mara has been settled. The John Kako Dana Balter race has been settled, but there's others that are still up in the air. Brindisi Tenney has gotten real close. Any others that could upset that supermajority status in the state Senate? With these absentee ballots still in limbo, could some races still sway here at this late hour?
Yeah, they could. I mean, you know, we're looking at Westchester County, for example. There was a much-watched race between Rob Astorito and Peter Harcum, and that race is still being decided. And so there is still a chance that the Democrats can take the supermajority in the state Senate. And even in, you know, the congressional races, looking at New York 22, that race is going to come down to probably less than 500 ballots between Claudia Tenney and Mr. Brindisi. Yeah. So that's a race to be watching as well.
November is National Adoption Awareness Month. I know, Michael, this is an issue that's near and dear to your heart. And this month, the U.S. Supreme Court heard a case out of your state pitting a faith-based foster care agency against the city of Philadelphia. Explain why our listeners need to be paying attention to this.
In shorthand, this case is called the Fulton case. It was argued before the Supreme Court the very day after Election Day on November 4th, and our attorneys from our Independence Law Center listened intently, and they were very excited about what they heard. At issue in the case is the city of Philadelphia has decided that the Catholic Social Services Adoption Agency and Foster Care Agency, which is the longest-serving agency in that city, can no longer do adoptions or placement for foster care because they will not place children in homes with same-sex couples. That's something that the Supreme Court heard that case because they recognize, at least the justices that were asking questions, Justice Barrett and others, saying this seems like religious bigotry.
Yeah.
And so we're hopeful for a good result in that because we think it is religious bigotry that the city of Philadelphia shut down the Catholic Social Services Adoption Agency.
Another big case at the U.S. Supreme Court might be flying under a lot of people's radar, but this is huge. Depending on what the court does, and these arguments are set for November 30th Jason, it could determine whether New York loses one or two seats in Congress next year. Please explain what's going on here.
Yeah, there's a court case, as you mentioned, coming to the Supreme Court November 30th. And it's a question as to whether or not in the census is to be included information regarding people that are non-citizens or undocumented immigrants. And the status of what happens with that case will determine the number of congressional seats that New York has. And because we have such a high population of people who live here, it is believed that we actually have more congressional positions than are represented by actual voters here in the state. And so whichever way that goes may determine whether or not we lose one or two of these congressional seats.
All right. So many issues, so little time, as we like to say. It's the fastest 10 minutes in radio. But if you have questions about the great work going on at the Pennsylvania Family Institute, you have a wonderful website, Michael, where folks can check you out. What is that, sir?
PAFamily.org.
And stay informed on all the issues in New York as well. Jason McGuire.
AlbanyUpdate.com.
Great show as always. It's called Capital Connection. Comes your way every Friday during the noon report.
Good afternoon. It's breezy outside. It's unusually warm for this time in November. And a bit of a bonus, we're seeing more sunshine than I thought might be the case earlier. So it'll be a very pleasant afternoon in all locations. The clouds will move in tonight as a cold front approaches from the north. That front will push south through the region as we head through the night tonight, producing very little, if any, precipitation. And tomorrow, temperatures will be cooler as a result. Some sun will come out mainly north of the Thruway in New York. The clouds may be rather persistent farther to the south. We'll continue to have clouds as we head through tomorrow night, and approaching low pressure on Sunday will bring some precipitation to the area, mainly rain, but there may be a little bit of wet snow in some locations, especially higher terrain areas, but even there, no serious accumulation is anticipated at this point.
Okay, Ken McKinley, have yourself a great weekend. Finally, this Friday, skipping Thanksgiving dinner with your family this year because of COVID? Well, Family Life's Brandon Dixon tells us there's a way to be present without being in person.
A Western New York graphics company is making it possible to still be at the table, kind of, with a life-size cutout of yourself. Zoom Buffalo is offering the cutouts in a seated position, so it looks like you're sitting at the table in both adult and kid sizes. The company is also offering a cheeky window sticker featuring the top half of Governor Cuomo's face. When displayed in a window, it looks like he's checking in on the number of guests at your celebration. You can get yours at ZoomBuffalo.com. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Oh, I'm getting mine. Thank you, Brandon. That is the world we live in. This Friday, as always, thanks for coming along. Have a great weekend, won't you? I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.